So yeah, the goal of this lecture will be to cover symmetry-protected topological phases. So these are also called SVTs. And I guess one of the reasons why these are so important is because they've actually seen a lot of experimental realizations in the past several decades. I think some of you have probably heard of topological insulators. These are real materials that have pretty interesting boundary properties, as we'll see. But also conceptually, these are also quite interesting, and I think I'd say like most of the activity these days in SPTs is largely theoretical. So, yeah, to provide some context for SPTs, let me just kind of compare them with phases of matter we've seen before. So previously, we've seen spontaneous symmetry breaking, or let me just abbreviate that SSB. And one way to think about SSB is that if symmetry is enforced, then one is forced to consider long-range entangled or long-range correlated states. And those GHZ states for Z2 symmetry breaking are the simplest example. But then we also saw in the last two lectures topological order, right? And these are already non-trivial, even without any symmetry. At least without any symmetry in the more conventional sense, like a global symmetry, like a globalizing symmetry. Even though some of you might have noticed this current workshop going on this week in which even topological order can somehow be understood in terms of generalized symmetries. Okay. But that's beyond this course. Okay, so SVTs are yet another category in which symmetry can play a very non-trivial role. So SVT states, as we'll see, are short-range correlated. However, they're non-trivial or a distinct phase from a trivial state when symmetry is enforced. So in that sense, they're kind of a cousin of spontaneous symmetry breaking. They both rely on the presence of some global symmetry to be non-trivial. However, the difference is that SSB states, when symmetries are enforced, are long-range correlated. Okay. But as you'll see, SPT states, when symmetry enforced, still look rather trivial. Okay. However, they're not connected to trivial states. One has to undergo a phase transition, as we'll see. Okay. So for SPT states, the bulk physics, in other words, if one considers the system with periodic boundary conditions, bulk physics is actually relatively trivial. Like, for example, there are no anyon excitations, like in topological order. There are no long-range correlations. And instead, the non-trivial part is one way which is manifest is by looking at the boundary of the system. Okay, so that's a rough preview of the physics of SPT. And now, as we've been doing the whole course, let's dive into a specific example of SPT, non-trivial SPT.
Could I ask a question?
Yeah.
When you say, could you remind me what you mean when you say this symmetry is enforced, like with topological order? There is this constraint that all of the stars and plaquettes are one, but that's not a symmetry.
Yeah. So that's not but so by symmetry here, I mean what's now called like a zero form symmetry. So it's a symmetry that's like a tensor product of some on-site operator at every site. So it's like some global spin flip, let's say.
Okay.
And so the Torah code model does have such a symmetry. Right, but that's not essential in the physics that we observe. Or in other words, when we break that symmetry by adding some like local field,
yeah,
the phase remains robust. Okay. Like the anion excitations are still defined, the ground state degeneracy is still, you know, exponentially split. So there's no need to preserve that symmetry in keeping the phase robust. Right.
Okay.
In contrast, SSB, you know, relies on preserving that symmetry.
Right.
Right. And as we'll see, SPT also relies on that. Yeah.
Thanks.
So let's consider a simple model of SPT called the cluster state in one dimension. Okay, so we'll be working in one dimension. Again, consider some system of qubits. And let's divide the qubits into two sublattices, A sublattice and a B sublattice. Okay. And so the Hamiltonian we'll consider is interaction between three nearest neighbors. So we'll have zi, xi plus 1, zi plus 2. Okay. And again, the symmetry is the most important one of the important aspects of this. So let's just define it right now. The symmetries are Z2 cross Z2 symmetry. So there are two Ising symmetries corresponding to spin flips on the two sublattices. Okay, so one of the Z2s is a spin flip or product of X operator on the A sublattice, and the other one is a spin flip on the B sublattice. Okay, so it's pretty quick to check that these are indeed symmetries of the Hamiltonian. X operators commute with X, and then when they act on one sublattice, they may involve a pair of Z's. And so, you know, you'll get a minus sign twice, and that'll be plus. Okay. So there are two Ising symmetries, one for each sublattice. And just as the case for Torah code, this is an example of a stabilizer Hamiltonian. Okay, so it's a Hamiltonian built from Pauli strings, and all these terms commute with each other, right? So again, obviously, if the Pauli operators are disjoint, they commute. And even if they, overlap, they either overlap with Z's, which commutes, or they overlap with XZ, which anti-commutes, but there's always a pair of them. Okay. So, so all terms commute. And so this means that, again, the ground state is easy to define. The ground state is stabilized or defined by all these operators taking value plus one. Okay. That is the minimum energy. Okay. So if you consider a one-dimensional ring, so if you consider periodic boundary conditions, then there's a unique ground state. Right. So on a ring, say of L qubits, then one has L stabilizer constraints, and these constraints are all independent. Okay. So, like, unlike the toric code case, where they multiply to one on a torus or identity on a torus, here one can check that they're all independent. Okay, so there are L constraints, L qubits. So, on a ring, there's exactly one unique ground state. And furthermore, there's a gap above this ground state, obtained by flipping some of the stabilizers. Okay, however, things become very interesting when we consider open boundary conditions. So now with open boundary conditions, for example, this picture here, now we have fewer stabilizers in our Hamiltonian, right? So we have ZXZ at the boundary, ZXZ, ZXZ, then ZXZ. So now we have L qubits, but now we have fewer stabilizer constraints. We have L minus two constraints. And so this actually means that there's a two squared or fourfold degeneracy. Okay, that means there are actually four ground states when we consider open boundary conditions. Okay, so how do we understand this fourfold degeneracy? So we can parameterize or just or fully specify this fourfold subspace. By defining basically the analog of those string operators we saw in the toric code, right? We can just specify what each of these states corresponds to, and so one can parameterize this fourfold degeneracy by precisely these symmetry operators. Okay, so if you consider the symmetry operator just product of x's on A sub lattice, then this, it's still a symmetry with open boundary conditions. It commutes with all the terms, right? However, it's this is now independent of the stabilizers, right? So in contrast, if you consider a ring or periodic boundary conditions, then the symmetry operator actually can be obtained by multiplying all these ZXZs together, The symmetry operator is actually a product of the stabilizers when put on a ring. However, for open boundary conditions, the symmetry operator is an independent string. Okay. So this is why it can take value plus or minus one. And similarly, there's another string, the other symmetry. And this can also take value plus or minus one. Okay. So this now fully specifies what these four states correspond to. They're uniquely defined by both the stabilizers being plus one and these symmetry operators being plus or minus one. Okay. So if one considers a symmetry breaking perturbation, a symmetry breaking perturbation H prime, for example, let's say you apply a small field on the first and the last spin of this chain. Let's say minus epsilon z1, epsilon zl. Then this will lift the degeneracy. Okay, so this is a symmetry breaking perturbation that's applied locally at the two boundaries of the chain. Okay, and it will lift this degeneracy because now now this will just favor z1 being plus one, zl being plus one, and all the other stabilizers still being plus one. These z1 and zl, they commute with all the stabilizers, but they break the Ising symmetry. Okay. So these are local. Sorry, by local I mean they act locally on the two boundaries. They're local symmetry breaking perturbations that can lift this fourfold subspace. However, you can convince yourself that there's no local symmetry preserving H prime. There's no local symmetry preserving perturbation that can lift this degeneracy. Okay. So this is because to lift this degeneracy, we need some operator with non-zero matrix elements between these four states, right? And so, but to have non-zero matrix elements between these different symmetry eigenstates, you need some operator that breaks the symmetry, right? That can connect between different symmetry eigenstates. So there's no local symmetry preserving H prime that can lift it. However, there is another way in which you can lift the fourfold degeneracy. You can just apply this operator itself to favor one of the eigenstates, right? So a non-local way, a non-local symmetric way is to just apply one of these symmetry operators itself. So you can just choose like minus PA, let's say, or minus PA, minus PB, for example. And this will favor PA being plus one, PB being plus one. Okay. But this is a non-local operator acting on the whole system. Okay. And furthermore, it's a non-local operator, and the resulting state it will pick out of the degeneracy, you can check, has long-range correlations. Okay. Yeah, there'll be long-range correlations between the endpoints. Okay. So the moral of the story here is that we have this fourfold degeneracy, and there's no way of applying any symmetric local perturbation to the boundary to lift this degeneracy. Okay, so now let's try to understand this in a slightly more fundamental way. First, are there any questions about just this what I just said.
I get PA and PBB plus and minus one again. I think I missed that.
So these are independent stabilizers which commute with all the terms in the Hamiltonian, and they're not specified by the terms in the Hamiltonian, right? And so plus one, th them taking probably plus one or minus one, they have the same energy. So in contrast, for periodic boundary condition on a ring, right, now this PA actually is a product of a bunch of ZXZ terms in the Hamiltonian. So the ground state is already in one symmetry sector. Like when all the ZXZs are one, with periodic boundary condition, that forces PA and PB to each be one. But with open boundary condition, it's independent generator
I see, I see.
now.
So, I mean, it's like two Ising, like in the Ising model, you have the P can be plus or minus one.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Okay. So a more formal way of understanding this is that each boundary forms a projective representation of the symmetry. Okay, so let me just briefly tell you, at least for this purpose, what a projective representation is. So recall that our symmetry group is Z2 cross Z2. And let's call the generator of each Z2 GA and GB. Okay. And so so this group is very simple. GA scores the one, GB scores the one. GA, GB commute, right? And the representation of the symmetry in terms of PA and PB is a regular, or okay, I don't actually, I guess I think people are like a linear representation of the symmetry. So PA and PB, PA and PB, they obey exactly the same algebra as these group elements. Okay, so PA and PB is a I think it's called linear representation. Okay. However, for a projective representation, basically one has a representation of these group elements in which the group homomorphism is satisfied only up to some phase factor. So for a linear representation, one would just have a trivial phase. One just has the representation has exactly the same form as the group elements. So that's what P and PB form. However, for a projective representation, you're allowed some phase factor for this group action. Okay. So we'll explicitly see this yeah, so we'll explicitly see this. Okay, so this is just a general statement about projective representation. And so to see why each boundary forms a projective representation of the symmetry, we'll want to look at the effective boundary symmetry action. Okay, so let me just explicitly go through this. So let's say we have our 8-qubit open boundary condition chain. Okay, so so first let's consider one of the symmetry actions, PA. Sorry. So one of the symmetry actions, PA, is just the spin flip on one sublattice. So product of x's on one sublattice. Okay. And we want to see so the question is, will we use this symmetry action, will we operate the symmetry action on the ground state subspace? In other words, this fourfold degenerate subspace. What is the effective action on the boundary of the chain, right? So basically, these ZXZ constraints, they're kind of freezing out the bulk, right? There's no active degrees of freedom in the bulk. So we want to see what the symmetry action is in the ground state subspace at the boundary. Okay. So we're going to want to trade this symmetry action into some action on the boundary of the chain. And we can do that by using the fact that in the ground state subspace, all these stabilizers take value plus one, right? Okay, so all these stabilizers take value plus one in the ground state subspace. So now these ZXZs, they all take value plus one, so we can just multiply them all onto the symmetry action. And you can see that when you just multiply these ZXZs to the string of X's, you get a symmetry action that's localized at the two boundaries. Okay, so the ZXZs are one. I'm free to multiply them to the symmetry action. So the X's cancel, the Z's cancel in between. And what is left with XZ at the left boundary, Z at the right boundary. Okay. And one can do the exact same thing for the other symmetry action. So one has spin flip on the other sublattice. That's PB. And one can again use the fact that all these stabilizers take value plus one in the ground state subspace to trade this symmetry action for a effective boundary action of Z and ZX. Or sorry, Z and yeah, I guess Z and ZX, yeah. Okay, so yeah, basically the picture is that here we have some effective boundary Hilbert space, and this is what the symmetry action is in this boundary Hilbert space. Okay. So now you can see that if you just look at one boundary, like say you look at the left boundary, then the representation of GA is now XZ, right? The representation of GB is Z, right? And so the representation at this boundary, in this representation of the boundary, is actually anti-commute. Right. And similarly, for the effective action at the right boundary, you have zx, then you have z, and z anti-commutes with that. Right. So basically, the effective symmetry action at each boundary still obeys the z2 cross z2 group action, but now up to a non-trivial phase factor of minus 1. Okay. So it forms each boundary. For each boundary, the symmetry action forms a projective representation. Okay, so what are the consequences of this projective representation? So this projective representation actually enforces boundary degeneracy. Okay, so basically, you know, say we wanted to have a unique state, right? Say we wanted to have like some single state that's invariant under the symmetry. Well, the fact that we have a projective representation, okay, at least in this case, it means that the local symmetry action, they don't commute, okay? And so it's clear that you cannot have a single state invariant under both terms in the symmetry because they anti-commute, right? Like if I want to satisfy one of them by having a z eigenstate, then this will flip it, right? So the only way to have, the only way to preserve the symmetry is to have at least a twofold degeneracy, right? At least a twofold degeneracy. And this is now at least compatible with symmetry being preserved, right? So I can consider a two-dimensional space of z being plus or minus one, right? And now this can be invariant under both these symmetries, even though they anti-commute, right? So this is just a rough way to see how, you know, a non-trivial projective representation, here reflected by the anti-commutation, leads to or enforces a degeneracy at the boundary. Okay. Yeah, so the picture here is that with open boundary conditions, we have a local twofold degeneracy at each boundary, and this is protected by the fact that the symmetry action for each boundary is a projective representation. Yeah, let me pause for any questions about that.
Is it just a coincidence in this case that the boundary terms are just the missing stabilizers from the periodic? Like, if you wrapped this around from 1 to 8, these would just be stabilizers that appear if you have periodic boundaries.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. I think that's pretty, I guess, specific to this model. But yeah, yeah, that's another way to see how with periodic boundary condition, this x string is not an independent generator, right? Because as you said, this stabilizer would actually exist on a ring.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So it's it's all consistent, right? Yeah. Okay, so this is one defining property. Well, at least one way to, yeah, one way to define a non-trivial SPT precisely by this anomalous effective symmetry action on the boundary. Okay. And this is actually worked out by Dominic Els and Chetan Nayak. And Dominic is, as you probably know, is a local here. So, yeah, so for more details, you can certainly reach out to him. Okay, so that's somewhat abstract. So maybe a more computable measure for diagnosing SPT, at least in 1D, is to use a string order parameter. Okay, and as you'll see, this is closely tied to this effective boundary action. So 1D SPT has what's called string or non-local order. Yeah, so we need a more subtle kind of order parameter here, because you can check that if you use some conventional order parameter, like some two-point correlation function, those all are trivial for this SPT state. Okay. Yeah, so now I'm imagining considering, again, periodic boundary conditions. Okay. So I'm considering periodic boundary conditions, and the question is, how do I diagnose whether this unique ground state is a non-trivial SPT or not? Okay, so we need to consider this extended operator. So again, for this very simple cluster state Hamiltonian, it's easy to guess what the string operator might look like. You just multiply these stabilizers. You can do this indefinitely, right? And so you just get a string that has x's on a sublattice in the middle, and then z's at the endpoints. Right, so you can just multiply these stabilizers. They all take value plus one in the ground state. And so that means that this extended string operator also takes value plus one in the ground state. Okay, so that's the what happens for this particular cluster state Hamiltonian. However, more generally, one can consider a string operator that's given by some operator at the endpoints and some truncated symmetry action in the middle of the string, and some another operator at the right endpoint. Okay, so here P truncated, in this case, is just this product of x's in the middle of the string. This is if you take the global symmetry action that you truncate it into a segment, right? And here OL and OR are two, So for this particular case, we're looking at a Z2 cross Z2 symmetry, right? And this is P truncated for maybe one of the symmetry actions, like GA, let's say. And for this general form of the string operator, the two endpoints, OL and OR, are charged under the other Z2 symmetry GB. Okay, so again, for this ideal cluster state example, we have truncated symmetry action on one sublattice, and the endpoints are these Z operators, each of which is charged under the other Z2, the product of X's on the other sublattice. Okay, so this form of the string operator is the most general form of some way to detect Z2 cross Z2 SPTs in 1D. Okay. And As you can see, this is closely tied to the effective boundary symmetry action, right? Because for the effective boundary symmetry action, we're precisely truncating the symmetry action. We have to, it's open boundary, right? And we're looking at kind of the effective action of that string on the endpoints, right? This string order is just telling you that the effective action of the truncated string is some non-trivial projective representation on the boundary. Okay. So for an SVT state, the string order parameter takes value, okay, it won't be exactly one, it'll be some order one number. But the key is that it'll be long range, right? So you can take the string arbitrarily long, independent of the distance between the endpoints, and it just doesn't decay. Okay. So you have this long range order for the string order parameter. Any questions about that? Yeah.
Is B generalized to two dimensions?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think so, but I also have not seen that many like explicit studies of that. The anomalous symmetry action can certainly be generalized to two and higher D, to most SBTs, to most SBTs. However, I guess rigorously converting the anomalous symmetry action into a string order, there still might be a couple of missing steps. Yeah, but I know that in 1D, I think this is fairly rigorous. Yeah. Okay, so this is one way to diagnose a non-trivial SVT with periodic boundary conditions. And this also helps us to understand how in the presence of symmetry or when we enforce a symmetry, this SVT state is not smoothly connected to a trivial symmetric state. Okay. So that'll be the goal. That'll be what I want to show now. Yeah, so the claim is that this SBT is non-trivial. In presence of symmetry. Okay, so recall that for the more quantum information theoretic definition of non-trivial, we say that it's non-trivial or in a different phase. If they cannot be related by finite depth local unitary. Or finite time evolution with a local Hamiltonian. And so in the presence of symmetry, we want to show that an SVT state and a trivial state cannot be related by any symmetric. Finite depth local unitary or finite time evolution with a symmetric local Hamiltonian. Okay. And so here by a symmetric finite depth local unitary, what I mean is some quantum circuit where each gate is symmetric. Okay? So with the help of the string order parameter, we can see why something with a non-zero string order of that form cannot be transformed into a trivial state by any symmetric finite-depth unitary. Okay, and the reason is that so say we have some symmetric finite-depth unitary U sim. Okay, then by definition, this local unitary will commute with the truncated symmetry action. And it'll just dress the endpoint operators by some amount. Okay. So it'll turn OL into U OL U dagger, OR into U OR U dagger. And so you can see that the symmetric finite depth circuit, it has to preserve the charge of the operator. If the operator was already charged, then dressing it a little bit with symmetric finite depth circuit will just make a slightly bigger charged operator, right? And similarly, if OL and OR are not charged, then it'll just maintain that as well. So this finite depth symmetric circuit cannot change a non-trivial projective representation into a linear representation. Okay. And so this is why if this string operator is long-ranged for SPT state, any finite depth circuit cannot transform it into a trivial state. For a trivial state, the effective symmetry action at a boundary would be trivial. Right, like these operator endpoints would not be charged. Okay, so a finite depth symmetric circuit is unable to move between those two states. Yeah, let me just write that for trivial. Yeah, for a trivial state, I guess one can also define some string order, but now these endpoints are not charged. Any questions about that?
Just by charge, do you mean they have some value that is determined by the others? Actions.
By charge here, I just mean that in this case it anti-commutes with the product of x on the other sublattice, right? So that's what I mean by the operator being charged.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, ultimately it's just because of this effective projective representation. That's this Z here is precisely like the Z here.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so this argument shows that SPT state cannot be prepared with any finite depth symmetric circuit from a trivial, say, product state, right? However, unlike the GHZ states, it actually can be prepared from a trivial state by a non-symmetric finite depth circuit. Okay? So let me just now explicitly show this for the cluster state. Okay, so one can consider a controlled phase gate on two qubits. So this it's called a CZ gate that in the four-dimensional Hilbert space, and say in the computational or Z basis, it looks like this. Everything else is zero in the matrix. And so you can see that if say we have two qubits AB, so if A is down, then it applies a Pauli Z operator to the B qubit. Okay, that's the sub matrix here. Okay, and it's pretty simple to check that if you apply this control Z gate, then it turns an X operator. Okay, so let's say we apply control Z gate onto qubits 1 and 2. It turns X operator on 2 into Z1 X2. And if you apply control Z on 2 and 3, then it turns X2 into X2 Z3. So this means that if we just take a unitary that's a product of all these control Z, for every neighboring pair of spins, then this takes the trivial all plus state into the cluster state. Okay, this is just the Heisenberg picture of that statement, because the CZs will, all the CZs will turn a single X into ZXZ. Okay, so obviously this is a very finite depth circuit. It's just one layer of gates, right? One layer of all commuting gates, in fact. But the key here is that each individual gate breaks this Z2 symmetry. Okay. Yeah, so we see that this cluster state ground state is actually not that non-trivial, right? It's still connected to a product state by some short time or short depth evolution. However, if you enforce that all the gates in that circuit or all the terms in the Hamiltonian in the evolution are symmetric, then they're not smoothly connected. Okay. So now similar to the spontaneous symmetry breaking case, we can now have extended phases of SPT states as long as all the terms in the Hamiltonian are symmetric perturbations, right? So as we can start with, like, say, the ideal cluster state, and then add, for example, some additional term in the Hamiltonian, like, say a transverse field, and then eventually we'll drive that into a trivial phase when that perturbation is large enough. But the fact that this is a again, the cluster state has a gap. if I apply this perturbation, then I can again do some quasi-adiabatic evolution that will transform this cluster state to a new ground state. But as we said, any finite time symmetric evolution cannot affect the non-trivial character of SPT. So that's why this SPT remains robust. It's a phase up to some threshold here, right? But as before with SSB, if we break the symmetry, then one can easily go from any trivial state to the SPT state without any phase transition. Okay. Okay, so I think that's all the. Okay, yeah, it's hard to do justice to the SPT in one lecture, but I hope I've given you a taste of some of the non-trivial properties. The boundary physics is non-trivial, right? We have, in this case of 1D, we have a robust degeneracy at each boundary. It's gapless at each boundary, and in higher dimension, this can have even more interesting phenomena, right? So the topological insulators I alluded to at the beginning, right? These are most of these are three-dimensional bulk materials with protected gapless surface states, right? That's the manifestation of this anomalous symmetry boundary action in that higher dimensional case. And even that Kataev wire example that I again briefly mentioned when discussing Jordan Wigner of transserializing, that's another example of an SPT that's protected by a fermion parity symmetry, right? So each Majorana mode at the endpoint of that chain is anomalous with respect to fermion parity, right? It anti-commutes with the fermion parity operator. Yeah. So that's probably that's one of the simplest SPTs.
Is there any easy way to see that even the excitations of this, like setting one stabilizer to -1, won't be exotic like the anions?
That's a good question. I think in some sense it's tied to the fact that there is only one unique ground state. Right, like the, that's not totally satisfactory either, but is there a way to see that's not exotic? You need to create, you need to create some pair of stabilizer excitations, but you can do that with some Pauli strings. In fact, this truncated symmetry action kind of does that for you already, right? It will create a pair of excitations, but that's it. It's just this Pauli string, that commutes with itself, right? Yeah, so the bulk looks pretty boring. Like pretty much the only thing there is this string order, right? Yeah. Any other questions?
It's also because in 1D we can upgrade excitations.
Yeah, okay. That's a good point too, yeah. I guess you can still have fermions, right?
How to exchange them to see a -1 sign?
Okay, so yeah, sorry. So yeah, sorry. I guess what I had in mind was like a non-local transformation into a fermionic system, right? So if you have you can again define some fermions by Jordan-Vigner transformation on this, right? Those will be some string operators of Pauli's, right? Yeah, so in that sense, you can find some fermions in the model, right? But yeah, but as Leo said, you don't really, you cannot really like braid them to get non-trivial statistics, right? It's just a different description. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Is there an experimental realization of these things? Are they useful, for instance, in quantum computing?
Yeah, that's a good question. So so the cluster state is kind of a toy model of actually a different model that was analyzed much earlier, basically a spin one chain. Yeah, so if one considers like a spin one Heisenberg model, then this is actually an example, another example of an SPT that's also protected by minimally a Z2 cross Z2 symmetry. And this spin one chain actually has some realization in terms of some experiment. I think like some copper chain, if I remember. And there, I think there are actually some signatures of an effective spin 1/2 degree of freedom at each boundary of that spin one chain, right? So yeah, like I think even in this 1D setting, there have been observations of SPTs, yeah. Right? Also, I guess this, I think Yinchen discussed Su Schieffer-Hieger model at some point, right? That, I think that's also, yeah, polyacetylene, right? That's another, you know, it is realized, right? Yeah.